Today, I'm going to tell you a few stories. One of these is a parable called The Return of the Prodigal Son. But before I go into that, I want to tell you this. When we talk about brothers, there are a number of stories. I don't know how many of you have a brother. There are a number of stories which jump out to you of incidences when you were growing up, which you will never forget. So I just want to quickly share one story about my brother. And this story starts when I graduated from university. I applied for a number of graduate positions, and one of them was in Whitehall. And for this particular job, I needed security screening. So I sent off for this screening. I went off to the interview. Had what I thought was a very good interview. Did very well. Again, what I thought on the written test. And then I got home in the evening, and my brother was looking really excited. Now, I'm going to prefix this to say my brother studies chemistry. Otherwise, you might get the wrong idea. So I go, Chris, what have you been doing with your day? Why are you so excited? It's like, I've been trying to make gunpowder. I'm like, okay, why are you trying to make gunpowder? Because it's exciting. Okay, that's fine. It's just an interview. There's no way that Chris playing around in the garden shed is going to make gunpowder. So how did you find out how to make gunpowder? Oh, I looked at it online. Great. And okay, you can't get the ingredients to get gunpowder. It'll be fine. No, I got the ingredients off eBay. Needless to say, I didn't get the job. So we're talking about brothers, and this is probably Jesus' best story on brothers. This parable, if you've been in the church a while, you will have heard it a lot of times. You will have read it many, many times. You will have heard many, many talks on this, which is why I'm giving it a subtitle of Not Another Talk on the Prodigal Son. So for many, many years, I've been going through this story. I've been listening to it in church, brushing over it when I read the Bible. And really, really recently, God just revealed something new in this. So up until recently, I've thought it's a story to illustrate the journey to God, the journey to faith. Or maybe it's talking about the Jews and the Gentiles and their relationship at the time of Jesus. I apologize, I did history. I think everything has some sort of historical narrative. However, like I said, God really drew me much deeper into this, and I want to share one of the insights with you tonight. Many of the talks you may have heard would have probably talked about the younger son and his journey back to the father. Some of the talks you may have heard will have talked about the elder son and how, while he's serving God, he loses track of who he's doing it for, and it becomes about the ritual and about the legality of serving and doing things for God. Tonight, I want to look at the Father and how we're called to imitate Christ in our lives. But for those who haven't read the passage before, we'll go through it really quickly. Jesus told the story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, the younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land. There he wasted his money in wild living. About this time, his money ran out and a great famine swept over the land, and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and a man sent him to feed pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him, but no one gave him anything. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, all the servants have enough food to spare, and I'm dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant.' So he returned home to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But his father said to the servants, quick, bring the finest robe in the house. Bring my best coat. Put it on him. While he's still mucky from working with the pigs, while he's still mucky from walking the long road home, bring my best coat and put it on him. Filled with love and compassion, he said, bring a ring and put it on his finger, and sandals for his feet. Kill the calf we have been fattening. Kill the calf we've been fattening for harvest, or kill the calf we've been fattening to sacrifice at the temple. Kill it as a celebration, because we must celebrate with a feast. For this son of mine was dead, and now he has returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. And the last bit, meanwhile, the elder son was in the fields working when he returned home and heard music and dancing in the house. He asked one of the servants what was going on. Your brother is back, the servants told him, and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his return. The older brother was angry and wouldn't go in. His father came out and begged him to go in. But he replied, all these years I have served you and never once refused a single thing you've told me to do. And in all that time you have never given me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back, so not when my brother, but when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. My son, the father said, you are with me always. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So as Christians, we believe we are called to become more like Christ, more like God. The more we know him, the more we get to spend time with him. And in this story, we have, I think, at some point, we have all been the younger son. At some point, we have all run away from God. We've turned our back on God. And if you've chosen to give your life to Christ, you've made that decision to start coming back to God. And then he meets you and offers you his grace, offers you his grace and forgiveness. And I think many of us here too have been the eldest son. Many of us have started with a real passion to serve God, but then something just becomes a bit more liturgical, something becomes a bit more doing it because I'm doing it. And we lose track of why we're doing this. But tonight we're going to really just focus on this image of God, this idea of being called to be more like Christ. So Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, just to back this up from the New Testament, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, imitate me as I imitate Christ. And later on in 2 Corinthians, he writes, and all of us with unveiled faces who contemplate the Lord's glory. He's talking here about no longer having a wall between us and God. But he's saying, now all of us, as we contemplate God's glory, the Lord's glory, we are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord. As a beloved child of God, God calls us into an ever-deepening relationship with him. This fundamentally changes or how we live, our relationship, how people see us. And more time we spend with God, more time we spend getting to see how he works, more we reflect his glory. This is just a picture of the return of the prodigal. And after this slide is a fundamental question I want to ask you tonight and keep coming back to this tonight. How can I imitate the Father? So I want to look what it says in the passage. How can I imitate the Father? What is the Father doing in this passage? So the first thing the Father is showing is love and compassion. Here we see the Father, we get this picture of a Father who is looking out for his son, who is waiting for his son to come back. It's not someone who's looking out of a window and thinking, oh, that's my son coming over the hill. That's great. It's someone who gets up every morning and walks across his land, walks out to the farthest bit of his land and looks out every day for his son. And every night he walks back and everyone in his village is looking at him thinking, his son's not going to come back. His son's not going to come back. Why is he going out? And he gets up every morning, his son's gone, walks to the end of his land, spends the day looking out for his son. And when he sees his son coming, when his son has taken that first step back to him, as Simon was saying, God does not want to force himself on us. He is waiting for that invitation from us. And when he sees that invitation, he runs to us. While we're still a long way off from him, he runs to us. He sees us coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, he ran to us, he embraced us. I think that is utterly amazing. This is before the son has even started to try and say sorry. This is before we have managed to eloquently turn to Christ and say, Lord, I'm sorry, he says. He runs to us, he embraces us. Nothing we can do can make God love us more. Nothing we can do will make God love us less. Nothing we can do will make God love us less. He doesn't make us jump through loops. He doesn't make us complete tests. He doesn't care about the shame or the guilt in our past. He loves us because God is love. He's waiting for us to come home. He's waiting to run to us and embrace us. And the next thing we see from the father in this story is his just abundant generosity. The son just starts making his apology to the father, but I get the sense when I read this passage, I don't know if you do, but I get the sense that the father is barely listening to his son's apology, and he's seeing his son, who spent months feeding pigs and then walks along a dusty road. In the picture up in Rembrandt, the Rembrandt, which flashed up briefly, it's got a picture of a son in rags with no shoes on and his hair all shaved off. And the father doesn't go, what has happened to you, son? He says, bring my best coat. Bring the best I have. Put it on my son. I don't care that he's been keeping pigs. I don't care he's been walking a long, smelly road. He takes his best ring and puts it on his finger. He puts sandals on his feet. And he kills the calf he has been saving for a special occasion. And he kills it because his son has come home and he wants to celebrate. God is lavishly generous. And there are so many stories I could tell you on his generosity, both practically, both full of grace and abundance of grace, and also stepping in where we can't see changes to situation. Just a really short story, really short illustration that me and Hannah, we got our first place 2 years ago. And it was a great opportunity. It was a right to buy scheme where we could buy half the property and rent out the other half of the property. And we'd budgeted everything to pretty much the pound, and we knew we could just about get the mortgage and pay the bills and pay all the legal fees. We moved into the house and we got this one last bill, and this was not in the budget. We budgeted for everything else, and it was £127. That doesn't seem a lot. At the time, to be honest, we didn't see it as much. We thought, oh dear, this is stressful, but not much. The day after, we got a letter from the gas and electricity company saying something along the lines, we don't think you really used your heating in your former place for the amount of years you were there, so you've got a rebate of £127, and here's a cheque. I have never experienced that before. I have heard stories of that before at the top of church, and I thought, really, is that just a coincidence? Until that happens. So God is generous. He is generous with his love. He is generous with his gifts. He is generous with his provision. If you read Luke 15, you have these three stories. The last one is the prodigal of the lost son. But each of these stories ends in a celebration because a son, a lost sheep or a lost coin or a lost son has been found. And this is illustrating someone turning to Christ, someone turning to God and being saved. And there's this, it says in the first story, the story of the lost coin, how much more will there be rejoicing in heaven when someone returns to him, when the lost return to him? And finally, we see the Father's humility. We see a father, when Jesus told this culture, and this is the historian in me coming out again, so you may just have to put up for this one moment. We see a father in a culture where men don't run, where patriarchs of families send out their servants to carry their messages. We see the father waiting at the end of his land and running to meet his son, embracing him and kissing him. He's embracing a son who's brought shame to his family. He's made his family unclean in the culture, but he doesn't care about that. He's overcome by the love of his son. And again, when the older brother doesn't come to the feast, in this culture, it's the eldest son who's meant to be the feast master, who's meant to tell the jokes, who's meant to open the wine and get the party going. So him not going in is a real rebuke to what's happening. And he doesn't send out a servant to rebuke his son. He doesn't send out a servant to say, "What are you playing at? Come in and celebrate because your son's here." He takes the time himself. He goes out of the feast himself, taking the role of a servant to say, come in, come back to the family. And because of this, this brings restoration and healing. We don't know what happens to the elder son, but we know the younger son receives, he comes in, he accepts this restoration, he accepts this healing. He puts aside the shame and the guilt of his past, and he gets welcomed back in to Christ's family. And while we are looking at the character of God here, I want to say, if that is relating to you, if there is issues in your past, if you are feeling a bit like the prodigal son, that you have just mucked up things in such a way you can't go back, the Father is just standing, waiting there to embrace you, to welcome you back into the family. And if you've made that commitment, if you are a Christian, but you've got something in your life where you've turned away, you've hidden it away from God, and you think, actually, this is too big to bring to God, it's too much to bring to God, he is waiting there again to embrace you and to welcome you back in. He's left the feast to say, come back into the family. Next, how can I imitate the Father? So I want to talk about how we can imitate the Father. And I'm going to keep this very short, just keep this as a very simple illustration. And last weekend, I went to see the Chinese State Circus. If you've not seen it, it is amazing. It was such a great evening. And the highlight of this evening was this amazing aerobatic display. I'd love to show you a picture, but it really wasn't that appropriate for church. Because everyone was very, they were climbing these silks and could not wear loose clothing in case it got caught. I will leave the rest unsaid. However, you're watching this picture and you're seeing both people do these amazing feats of aerobatics. They're jumping, they're catching, they're being dropped from heights and then being caught. And you're thinking, what if this goes wrong? How could this happen? This is just absolutely amazing. And I'm sitting on the edge of my seat thinking, I can't watch this. I can't watch this. I can't look away. I can't look away. And one of my favorite authors, a guy called Henri Nguyen, I love him because his books are just these little anecdotes of where he sat down with people and he talks about these conversations he's had. And he talks about going to one of these circuses and sitting down afterwards and talking to the trapeze artists. And I'm going to have to read this because I don't want to get any of these facts wrong. So he's asking them, how are you doing this? So you've got one role, which is a flyer, and one role is the catcher. So the flyer responds, as a flyer, I must have complete trust in my catcher. The public may think that it is I who is the great star of the trapeze, but the real star is Joe, my catcher. He has to be there for me with split-second precision. and grabs me out of the air as I come in from the long jump. How does it work? Omri asked. His secret is that the flyer does nothing. The catcher does everything. The flyer does nothing. The catcher does everything. I'm not supposed to catch Joe. It's Joe's task to catch me. If I grab Joe's wrists, I might break them, or he might break mine, and that would be the end for both of us. A flyer must fly, and a catcher must catch. The flyer must trust, with outstretched arms, that the catcher will be there for him. While this is an amazing picture of faith, I think it is also an amazing picture that as we learn to take these long jumps, as we reach out with open arms to God, as we take these longer and longer jumps, and as we realize God catches us and catches us, to the onlookers, to the people watching the trapeze going on in the middle of the circus at the edge of their seats thinking, I can't look away, I can't look away. It's not us they're seeing. It's Christ's reflection in us. As they're seeing, as people are seeing us, as we're taking these greater steps into what Christ is doing, as we learn to trust him more, as we learn to imitate him more, people see Christ in us. It's not us they see, it's Christ. His love, his compassion, his generosity, his humility, bringing restoration and healing, welcoming people into his family. He gives us the privilege to represent him in that. He gives us the privilege to welcome people into his family, to show his love, to show his generosity, to show his humility, to bring his restoration and healing, to give that invitation. What are the areas in your circles, in your life, that needs God's compassion? What are the areas you are aware of that needs God's generosity? What are the areas that you're aware of that need God's healing? Where can you show God through how you're acting? Where can you imitate the Father in your life? What areas are crying out for an imitation of the Father, for a reflection of the Father? One last story before we close, I love this story. This is a story from a charity called Open Doors, who work around the world with persecuted Christians. And the joys of hearing these stories is you see what God is doing, and sometimes you face the challenges of seeing the worth the world has to offer. But at the end of the day, God is building his church, and the gates of hell cannot overcome it. So this story, I can't share her real name. I don't know her real name for security reasons, so I'm going to call her Grace. Again, I don't know her age, but she's a young teenager, 11 or 12 or 13. And her father is a pastor. Her father is a pastor in Central Asia. And Central Asia is a country we don't know much about. It's a region we don't know much about because it's not on the news. It's not like Syria or Iraq or Nigeria or North Korea. It's hidden, and persecution is kind of swept under the carpet. Grace's father has had many issues from the police in her village. Leading a church upsets a lot of people. One evening, the chief of police came round to Grace's house to arrest her father. He knocks on the door. Grace goes up and answers the door. The chief of police is there and goes, "I'm here to arrest your father. Is he in?" If it was me, I think I would have shut the door and ran out the back. But Grace goes, no, he's not in at the moment. Do you want to come in?" So the police officer thinks, "Wow, it's going to be my best chance of finding him in the time I've got." He comes in, has a cup of tea, waits a couple of hours, and Grace goes up to him and goes, it's my dinner time now. I've got some dinner. Do you want to share it with me?" And he thinks, "Oh, I've been here a couple of hours. I'm hungry. There's no sign of the pastor. Let's sit down for dinner." So as he sits down for dinner, Grace goes, in this house, we always give thanks for the meal beforehand. Do you mind if we do this? And because he's a guest in the house, he feels compelled to say yes. So Grace prays a really simple prayer. And Grace goes, thank you, Lord, for this food. And thank you for this good man who's sharing it with me tonight. And thank you, and please bless his conversation with my father later. And this really, really affects the policeman, because he knows he's not a good man. He knows that he's taken money to look the other way. He knows, because there are people in the village who don't like Christians, he arrests their leaders. He knows that there is stuff wrong in his life. Yet there is a girl who knows he's there to arrest her father, praying a blessing on him. So after the meal, their father, Grace's father, comes back. And the officer goes into a separate room with Grace's father. And he says, tell me about Jesus. Tell me about Jesus. I want to know Jesus. I want to give my life to him. And that evening, the police officer was led to Christ, because of Grace's faith and courage to take a risk, to say a small prayer. And there she was really reflecting Christ's glory. There she was really being the father in the story of the return to the prodigal son. So if it is as simple as reflecting God, if it is trusting God, let's look out for those opportunities in our lives. Let's look out for those areas with our friends, with our family, with our work colleagues, where Christ's love is needed, where Christ's compassion is needed, where there is shame, where there is guilt, where just his grace, just his presence can break that. So I'm going to close with that one last question. How can I imitate the Father? How can I imitate the Father to those around me? How can I imitate the Father and bring his love and his grace and his generosity and his compassion?